Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 1964. My grandfather was a drinker.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Mountain Man Dan Show. We have a great show for you this week, so sit back, grab a drink, a cigar, whatever, and enjoy the show.
Changing man, that's not me. I rarely drink from the bottle, but I'll smoke a little weed. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go, in a town of 1200 off an old dirt road, and a country boy is all I'll ever be. Now it's been 12 years since I sold my soul to the devil.
All right, real quick, before we get started, I want to apologize. I'm recording out in the shop again, and I need to come up with this microphone. I need to find something to kind of dampen the sound around my recording area. I'm working on it. I'll figure something out right now. There's going to be a little bit of background noise. I turned the heater off in the shop, so hopefully I'm not fighting with that. I've got the mic set up right in front of me. I got the gain turned way down. So it's not going to be as much background thunking and that kind of stuff, but I'm not sure how the sound of my voice might not be quite as clear as I would like because of how open the shop is. But we're going to be working on this. You guys will just have to bear with me a little bit for this show and the next couple while we work on this. Anyway, yeah, it's been a little slow this week. Not much time between publishing this last episode and starting the script for this one. I put the last episode out Thursday, recorded it Wednesday, put it out Thursday. I'm trying to stick to Mondays for putting out episodes. So I'm recording this one Sunday night. I've been working on the script in the evenings. So the weekly update is going to be a little short this week. First off, I'd like to apologize for the background thumping and Mike peeking out in the last episode. Really still working on getting a better recording area set up. And like I said before, this mic picks up everything. I was able to edit out some of the thumping and that kind of stuff post-recording, but my editing skills are poor at best. So unfortunately, I was not able to get it all out. I will keep working on this issue, and hopefully we will get it cleaned up within a few episodes. I've also noticed I tend to talk fast like I would if I was carrying on a conversation. And in the podcast, I really need to slow down and talk a little bit slower. So I'm also working on the speed of my talking. But yeah, so the only project I've really been working on is a couple of chainsaws out in the shop the last few days. One of them is a pretty cool. It's a 1970s vintage Puon 4200 counter vibe. These old saws are nothing like the new Puon chainsaws. There's almost no plastic on them. This saw even has a cast aluminum top cover and all that, and almost zero plastic. I picked the saw up with a small lot of other saws, and I've been working on fixing it up. It's actually in really good shape for its age and fired right up. However, the recoil spring was broken and the fuel tank leaked. So I managed to patch up the fuel tank with some JB Weld. No luck finding a recoil spring for it yet. I bought a new old stock one on eBay that seemed kind of soft when I went to install it. And my suspicion turned out to be correct when the spring lost its end hook in about 10 pulls. Just super soft, wouldn't hold its shape. And I haven't found another suitable spring for it yet. I'm going to try to modify a recoil spring out of like a 372 Husky and see if I can make it work. The thickness of the spring is about right. It's a little more tension, which will be a good thing. But the where it connects to the inside of the housing and all that's a little different. So I'm going to have to reshape and retension it. But I'm really hoping to get the saw running and play with it some more, though. These saws were, during the 70s, they used to put reed valves in these saws in the intake. And with a little bit of work, I've seen some porting videos on these, and they can absolutely scream. The 4200 counter vibe is a 69cc saw, so no slouch at all. So it'll be interesting to see how this project pans out. I've also got a couple other saws torn apart on the bench too, but not that I've worked on this week. I also found that the 81 Jimmy has low compression on number 8 cylinder, resulting in a misfire, and I need to figure out what's causing that. I revved it up to about 4,000 RPM and poured a quart of a quart of Marvel's Mystery Oil down the carb and no chain. So I'm suspecting maybe it's got a bad valve seat. Since the compression, it's not zero compression, it's like 65-70 on that cylinder, PSI. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to tear into it just yet, since I need the plow to finish out the winter for another month. It's been running okay. I'm just going to live with the misfire for now. Other than that, it's been pretty slow cutting firewood off the pile out back to heat the house, and a whole lot of sitting next to the warm fire. Okay, since this is going to be a shorter show for the main topic, since I'm recording, I just tried to get a subject out to get some content. You know, I'm trying to do this weekly episode, and it's going to take me a little bit to get going. I am going to go ahead and talk about what I'm smoking today. I'm recording out in the I'm recording this episode on a Sunday night with the intention of publishing tomorrow and enjoying a beer and a cigar while I record. What kind of beer, you ask? Well, it was in the shop fridge, which happened to be a good old Miller High Life, which, you know, isn't too bad. As for the cigar, I'm trying something I've never had before. Tatiana, I believe that's how you say it, Tatiana Groovy Blue. So when I first started smoking real cigars, you know, getting away from like the Swisher Sweets and that kind of stuff I had occasionally, I really liked some of the infused cigars, like the Acid Blondie and a couple others like that, you know, from Acid and Drew Estate. And as I got into the taste of cigars, I found myself leaning more towards medium to full body cigars. And there's a few of the cigars that I used to really like a lot that I don't care for anymore. So the last time I made a cigar order, I ordered all my cigars online. There's not really any good cigar shops here anywhere close to where I am. We've got one shop in Fairbanks, you know, 2 hours away that's decent, but a little overpriced for what it is. I go in there and buy cigars from him to support him and his shop, but I don't buy like all my cigars there. I couldn't afford to smoke them if I did. So the last time I made a cigar order, they had a sale on the Tatiana infused sampler pack. I think it was like 24 cigars. I think, you know what the heck, the pack came with two of each, 12 different cigars, and I think it was like $34. You know, to be honest, I thought I was just gonna be getting some fatter Swisher Sweets. These are not a real fat cigar, but you know, a real cigar. So the other day, I opened the pack at random and grabbed one out. It was a cherry-flavored one, and I was pleasantly surprised that these look, feel, taste, and smoke like a premium cigar, not being overwhelming with either the flavor of the full body, you know, with either flavor of the whatever they're infused with, or the full body tobacco. And although I was busy splitting wood, so I couldn't really dig into it too much, I did enjoy it a lot. So today's cigar is the second cigar from that pack, chosen at random, and it is a Groovy Blue. The size on this cigar is a 6 inch by 44 ring, and according to the website, the Tatiana Groovy Blue cigars have an enticing flavor of berry soaked in vanilla, honey, and cognac, generating a taste that is smooth and mellow, accompanied by a pleasant aroma. Well, I've been sitting here smoking it while I record, and about maybe a quarter of the way through it, and must say I like this cigar. When you first put it in the mouth, the wrapper has a very pleasant berries and almost like a cream flavor along with the mild brandy. Really quite nice. Being a smaller ring cigar, I was sure to get a lot of the infused wrapper flavor out of it, but it's not overwhelming like a lot of the infused cigars I've smoked. On the cold draw, you can definitely taste the cognac. I hope I'm saying that word right too. It's not something I have to say a whole lot. But yeah, so once lit and burned down a little bit, really turns out to be a really mild cigar with a fantastic smell and flavor and a really nice even burn on this cigar. And I must admit, I am enjoying it much more than I thought I would. But I must also say that I'm not sure that the Miller was the best drink to pair with it. But you know, it's what was available. Alrighty, main topic, here we go. Bread and butter, biscuits and gravy, whatever, here we go, main topic. No secret that I love big bore rifles, and it's no secret that I love lever action rifles. And when you pair the two of them together, it's just like a match made in heaven. And if you ask me, there's really isn't anything else out there that handles or balances quite as well as a good lever rifle. And you know, when you're in the thick brush with bears, moose, things that want to stomp on you and eat on you, quick handling and hard hitting is a necessity. It's a must. So, there's a lot of other big bore rifles out there. We're really going to focus today on the Marlin 1895 round bolt rifles. Take a note, the round bolt rifles today and the 45-70 cartridge. And I have two rifles that fit this profile, although I do have a couple of other 45-70s. The first rifle is one that's really is very dear to me, and it's a first-year production Marlin that is the family calls Boo due to a serial number that starts with a B00. This rifle belonged to my dad when he was up here in Alaska and saved his butt twice that I know of and accompanied him on many hunting trips when he was working as a guide up here and, you know, just hunting for meat and whatever else. And as far back as I can remember, I always remember that rifle being there in, you know, wherever. That rifle's always been there. And a few years ago, my dad finally passed the rifle down to me. He hasn't passed away, but he's getting to the age where he's not getting out as much as he wanted to, and he wanted to be able to see me enjoy the rifle while he was still alive. So Boo is a straight-gripped rifle with a 22-inch Bowerd-cut rifle barrel and a 4-round tube. For sights, it has a dovetail cut directly into the barrel for the front sight instead of a ramp, and it has a short gold bead front sight. The rear sight is a one-of-a-kind side-mounted peep sight with a cam mechanism that was a custom-made prototype. The cam on the side is set to my dad's load using a 430 grain bullet at 1,850 foot per second, and is regulated in 5-yard increments from 100 to 200 yards. You got to remember the 45-70 has a rainbow trajectory, so 100 yards to 200 yards actually has a pretty significant drop, even with the hotter loads. The peep insert is long gone since Dad took it out as he started to age and lose eyesight. And since the sight was designed and built by a fellow in Canada, the threads for the peep insert are metric, and I've had no luck finding a peep insert that will fit it. At least I believe they're metric. I haven't been able to find something that fits it. I believe they're metric. I've considered taking the sight off, but I really just kind of want to leave the rifle just the way Dad had it. Simple leather sling and all. The rifle also has a few of my dad's signature Shade Tree gunsmithing marks. He told me that when he first got the rifle, it would have misfires because the lever would not close all the way. And you got to remember, on these rifles, this was the first variant of a straight grip rifle on the 336 receiver. And if the lever is not closed all the way, it won't disengage the firing pin safety all the way. To fix this, he took some kind of a grinder to the lower tang and ground it away until the lever would close reliably, and he also added some washers under the main hammer spring on the strut to give the hammer more power, resulting in a very heavy trigger pull, although it is smooth and short. Eventually, I would like to do a trigger job and replace the spring setup, but I want to kill my first bear with the rifle just the way Dad had it set up. This rifle has more experience killing bears in my old man hands than I ever will. Dad also added a shotgun-style rubber butt pad to the rifle, which is poorly fitted with grinder marks on the stock from where he sanded it down to kind of fit. I wouldn't say fit, but kind of fit. But, you know, it all adds character to the rifle. My dad was a cheap bastard, and he did what he did. If it didn't work for him, he made it work for him, and these modifications of this rifle show that. This rifle was a faithful companion to my old man all across the state. I wish I could get him on the show to tell some of the stories he has with this rifle, like the grizzly he shot in thick brush at about 10 feet away. But unfortunately, it will probably never happen, as he's not the most computer literate and pretty nearly deaf these days. The other rifle I have is a Remington-made Marlin 1895 GBL. This rifle is equipped with the factory 18-inch barrel and a 6-round tube and a pistol grip laminate stock. And I've actually got it topped with a Skinner Optics 1-6 LPVO. I initially bought this rifle with the intention of converting it to 50 Alaskan, and I still may someday, but really like it. I like it really well as a 45-70, and I just haven't felt the need to modify it. I'm generally not a fan of a scope on a lever gun, but this rifle still balances and handles really well with the small Skinner scope on it. Remington-built Marlins don't have the best reputation for quality, but this one has been a really good rifle for me so far and very accurate. Really nothing special about this rifle at all, other than that I am more willing to let it ride around the truck and stuff and get a little bit beat up while I try to keep from beating up old Boo. So, here we go. Marlin introduced the Marlin 1895 round bolt rifles, based on the 336 receiver in 1972, which is what year Boo was made. These rifles were not to be confused with the original 1895 square bolt rifles built from 1895 square bolt rifles built from 1895 until about 1917. And if I call it 1985 model, I mean 1895 model. My mush mouth and my numbers don't always add up the way I want them to. I'm not very good at math, and I'm mush mouth.
I don't know. I never counted. I am not really a math guy, you know.
Anyway, the newer round bolt design is a much stronger rifle and is suitable to be used with the hotter 45-70 loads, unlike the older rifles, which should be kept the low pressure rounds only. The first run of these rifles was supposed to be a limited run, and Marlin had Douglas make them a batch of barrels, and these barrels have the deep Ballard cut rifling and not the micro groove rifling seen on most of the Marlin rifles. I don't know how many of the rifles were made with the Douglas barrels, but they were only made with that barrel for the first year, I'm pretty sure. Boo is in the low 5,000 serial number range and is equipped with one of these barrels. And I've only ever seen two other Marlin 1895s with the Ballard cut rifled barrels, and they were both first year production. Marlin built the 1895 with a straight grip until 1980 and then started producing it with a pistol grip, calling it the 1895S. And although there were variants like the Cowboy model that used a straight grip, pretty much all the rifles produced since 1980 have had the pistol grip, with the exception of the guide gun introduced in 1998. I believe 1998, which were all straight grip until the GBL and SB rifles came out, like the one I have built by Remington, ported Marlin guide guns. And I was not impressed with the trade-off of noise over recoil reduction. In 2000, I believe, Marlin and Hornley brought out the 450 Marlin, which really showed what the rifle platform was capable of handling with the Marlin 1895. Up until then, other than hand loads and stuff, from what I've seen, the 45-70 was pretty, you know, I wouldn't say weak, but, you know, it's a 400 grain bullet at 1200 foot per second. But still, it's a bit shy of the 450 Marlin, which was pushing that same bullet close to 2000 foot per second with a pressure rating of 43,500 PSI. Of course, nowadays, there's all kinds of hot loads for the 45-70 available from companies. You can buy them off the shelf, like Buffalo Bore, Grizzly, and I'm sure there's a few others. So actually, let's talk about the 45-70 cartridge here for a bit now. Introduced in 1873, the original loading of the 45-70 for the Springfield Trapdoor rifle used a 405-grain bullet over 70 grains of black powder, which gives it its name 45-70, 45 caliber, 70 grains of powder. After the Sandy Hook test of 1879, a new variation of the 45-70 cartridge was produced, the 45-70-500, which produced a heavier 500-grain bullet. The heavier bullet produced significantly superior ballistics and could reach ranges of 3,350 yards, which were beyond the maximum range of the 45-70-405. While the effective range of the 45-70 on individual targets was limited to about 1,000 yards with either load, the heavier bullet produced lethal injuries at 3,500 yards. At these ranges, the bullet struck point first at a roughly 30-degree angle, penetrating 3 1-inch oak boards, and then traveled to a depth of 8 inches into the sand of the beach. It was hoped that the longer range of the 45-70-500 would allow effective volley fire at ranges beyond those normally expected of infantry fire. The Army mainly used the 45-70 in Springfield trapdoor rifles and Gatling guns, but there was also a few bolt-action rifles developed. The military actually still uses the 45-70, or the Navy does, as a line-throwing gun. And I've actually seen these line-throwing guns in person. The one I saw was built off of a NEF handy rifle frame, and it was super cool. I got to shoot it and throw some lines with it. It was pretty neat. Of course, the 45-70 also saw commercial and sporting use very early on in its life, chambered in rifles like the Sharps rifles, Remington rolling blocks, and, of course, lever-action rifles like the Winchester 1886 and the Marlin 1895. I think it's safe to say that the Siamese Mauser conversions that we started seeing, you know, I think probably in the 50s and 60s, And probably, you know, the Ruger number one rifles like that really led people to trying the hot rod, the 45-70. You know, the Ruger number one can handle 60,000 PSI, I think. But yeah, I think those rifles are really what led people trying to hot rod the 45-70, since they were so much stronger than the other rifles chambered for the cartridge. The original black powder load for the 45-70 with the 405 grain bullet pushed a projectile at about 1,350 foot per second from those long barrels seen on most of the trapdoor rifles. Since the 45-70 was originally black powder, most factory ammo today is loaded with a very low max pressure of 28,000 PSI. And loads like the 405 grain Remington Core-Lok only run about 1,250, maybe 1,300 foot per second. Of course, modern rifles can handle a lot more than that, and the 1895 round bolt rifles are no exception to this rule, especially the ones built after the year 2000, because Marlin made some changes to the barrel threads and a couple of other things for the 450 Marlin rifles that also carried over to the 45-70 rifles. The golden standard is that the Marlin round bolt rifles can safely handle 43,000 PSI loads all the way from the first year rifles like mine to the new ones. This 45-70 is a vastly different animal than the low pressure version, and factory Buffalo bore 400 grain lever gun ammo. Their factory lever gun load claims 2,000 feet per second with that 400 grain bullet. These types of loads are nothing to sneeze at. The original 400 grain load for the 45-70 was well praised for its killing ability, and the modern loads are even stouter. Pair a load like that with a good quick handling rifle, and it's clear why the Marlin 45-70s are so popular here in Alaska. As far as I know, or I've seen, the state troopers up here even have the Marlin guide guns in 45-70. Mostly the wildlife troopers, but they do keep them in the arsenal. I believe when Dad shot the grizzly that the neighbor wounded, he used some of his 500 grain paper patch loads, hand loads. I was pretty young at the time, and although I've heard the story a million times, I still can't tell it as well as he can, but I'll throw out a few details. Basically, the neighbor about a mile down the road, we'll call him Dave. Actually, his name was Dave, so don't be a Dave. I don't know if you guys have heard of that commercial or not. I can't find it online. I remember hearing it a few years. I always thought they were funny, the Don't Be a Dave commercials, but I can't ever seem to find them anymore. Nobody ever knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, Dave, neighbor down the road about a mile, had a decent-sized grizzly trying to come in his house after his wiener dog bit it on the butt. True story, he sent the dog out to go chase the bear off the compost pile or something. It ran out, bit the bear on the butt. And when the bear turned around, the dog hightailed back into the house with the bear hot on his tail. And Dave shot and wounded the bear with a 300 Win Mag. I think he was using 150 grain ammo. And then the bear ran off into one of our thick permafrost spruce thickets. And if you've never seen these spruce thickets, you guys have never seen this kind of terrain. It's nearly impossible to navigate or see through. So the neighbor called Dad, tells him what happened. Dad grabs Boo and heads down there and starts tracking the bear. And they are in a thick brush where you can't see more than about 5 feet, circling, kind of making a smaller circle to the area where they know the bear is. From what I remember Dad saying, at one point they heard the bear growl, and Dave actually dropped his rifle and took off running the other direction. So finally, Dad's circling, he's getting tighter, and he stepped on a twig or something. I forget the exact details of the story. But the bear stands straight up on his back legs about 10 feet away, and Dad smacks him dead center in the chest with Boo with that 500 grain paper patch load. I also remember about at least three other bears he shot with the rifle while hunting, as well as a few moose, one which was trying to stomp on him while he examined a dead calf that had been a winter kill, you know, a wolf kill or something. It was springtime, and he was examining it, and the cow was still hanging out and tried to stomp on him. He dropped her. And he dropped her only a few feet away here, you know, just a few feet away as well, hitting her right between the eyes with that rifle. He always said that in those moments, it was just like the rifle took over and did the job. I also know he carried the rifle while guiding, but I can't recall too many of those stories. I actually hate this story and the next one, but I do remember the first time I got to hunt with Boo, and the second time, which both kind of went badly. It was always the fact that when Dad got too old, I would get Boo, since, you know, being the oldest child, and the rifle stays in, and it was the fact, you know, the rifle stays in the family. And it's been about 3 years now since Dad let me have Boo, but as a teenager, I was finally able to convince him to let me start hunting with the old girl when I was about 14. So the first time I took Boo out, I was about 14, I was hiking down the banks of this dry creek bed called... Yeah, you guessed it, Dry Creek. Which leads down to this Hanaw River. And as we were getting closer to the river and things were starting to get damp, and I slipped and fell down the bank and face planted into the mud, which turned out not to be so dry. And unfortunately, Boo went down with me, landing solidly in the mud. And I tell you what, that was a long walk of shame back to camp, and I did not look forward to the scolding I was going to get for getting the rifle muddy. The second time, well, that I can think of, I'm sure I used the rifle more between 14 and 17, but the next time I can remember taking Boo out, other than once for moose hunting, so I guess it would have been at least the third time I remember taking the rifle out. A buddy and I went hunting back in the mountains, and Dad had told me to take Boo as well as my Husqvarna 30-06 I always hunted with because we were going into bear country. So me and my buddy spent an entire day on foal. We were following the Gerstle River up the mountains, you know, and spent a day hunting, and then we started back out. And on the way out, while following the river, the bank I was riding on gave way, dumping me and the four-wheeler into about 5 foot of water. And Boo was riding in the gun boot on the four-wheeler. Actually, maybe not. One of the rifles was in the gun boot. Might have been the 30-06. And the other one was strapped into a gun case on the front of the four-wheeler. But anyway, yeah, the riverbank gave way that I was riding on, and the four-wheeler landed on top of me, and I was in about 5 feet of water and pinned me down underneath of the wheeler. Thankfully, the guy I was with looked back and saw it happen and was able to get me out before I drowned, and we were able to winch the wheeler out, and after draining the tank and putting fresh gas in it, the old Honda fired right back up and we rode it out of the mountains. To this day, I watched over my shoulder if riding with a group about every minute to make sure no one is getting left behind. That's probably the closest call I've ever had. Probably the closest call I've ever had. Of course, I've had plenty of good hunts with old Boo too, and although it hasn't happened yet, I'd really love to get a bear with this old rifle. Hopefully, my schedule allows me to do a bear bait this spring, and if I do, Boo will be right there with me. Okay, guys, unfortunately, this episode was recorded pretty short after the other one went out, and I don't have anything for the gear review this week. I put the last episode out on a Thursday because I wanted to get it out there as soon as I was done with it. But ideally, I'd like to stick to Mondays for a release day every week. So I really had to buckle down and get this one done. I did order something that I'm super excited to review, and I think will be a great tool for small game hunters. And if it works as well as I hope it does, it'll be a great tool to keep on the reloading bench. I'm hoping to be able to do gear reviews every week, but we'll just have to see how it plays out. You know, right now I don't have any sponsors, I don't have people sending me stuff, so anything I review I have to pay for out of pocket. And like right now it's wintertime, I'm not working, so I don't have unlimited funds to go out and buy things to review. Anyway, this will unfortunately make this episode this week a little short, and for that I apologize. Last episode, I asked for feedback about the new show, and everything I've seen from you guys has been really positive. I did set up an email for the show to send comments or ideas to, and it's super simple. It's dansgunstuff@gmail.com. Again, that's dansgunstuff@gmail.com. Feel free to send any thoughts or ideas you have to that email, or any of the social media pages I'm on as well. And don't be afraid to send criticism. I can take it, and I want to make sure the show is as good as I can possibly make it. And I need your guys' input to be able to do that. And right there, you guys just heard my phone go off because I forgot to silence my phone. Those are things I need to remember to do, but that sound will definitely not be able to be edited out post-recording with my skill level. Alrighty, guys, well, that pretty much wraps it up for this episode. I know it was a bit short again this week, and I'm really trying to get some content out, and I'm hoping we will smooth into a nice roll as I get a feel for what direction we are going here. Next week, I'm either going to try to get with Nick if he has time and do an episode on rebuilding Chevy small blocks maybe, Or maybe do a solo episode on the Smith & Wesson Mountain Guns, or maybe do something else. I don't know. We'll see where the week goes. Anyway, again, thanks for taking the time to listen to your show and send your feedback. It really means a lot to me to be a part of your day in this way. If you guys have any ideas for topics, please don't hesitate to let me know. Or if you know you have something that you'd like to talk about that you're knowledgeable on, we can always set up guests for the show as well. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Thanks for listening. Be safe. And until next time, don't shoot yourself in the foot.
On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some? I'm fighting for my soul. God, get you, boy. You try to poke off, fall back, I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home. Doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, who wants some?
I see them long, hard times to come.
My life is ill, son.